Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and this is our Sword and Sandal Cinema Mythic Monsters crossover. And we have a fun evening planned for you tonight, full of facts on mythic people and monsters from mythology. Before we start our regular show, some quick legends of Hercules. The first is the Isle of Fear, part of the Hercules Prince of Power collection. Many heretofore hidden tales of the Argonauts have resurfaced, and there are still countless others that have yet to be revealed. In Marvel Preview Number 10, after an epic untold tale of Marvel's Thor, we are gifted with an unusual and never before or since related story of Hercules, the Prince of Power. Authored by Bill Mantillo and illustrated by Val Mayerick, this curious incident stars with Hercules, Jason, and the Argonauts on the Island of Fear. This, we are informed, is but the beginning of their cursed journey. Via flashbacks, we are provided with a backstory. In the land of Pylos, Jason's endangered King Creon's daughter Alceste by exposing her to the dangers of the arena. Though she only injured her ankle while seeking to avoid an enraged bull, Jason is sentenced to death. Hercules, who rescued both Jason and the princess by killing the ceremonial bull, rescues Jason yet again by requesting a boon. Creon seemingly relents, but sends them on a suicide mission to steal the gold of the Gorgon from the Isle of Fear. Back to the present. On the Isle of Fear, our heroes confront a steep and treacherous cliff and a ferocious griffin, though some would argue a chimera or manticore. As Hercules and Jason tackle the beast in the air, another flashback takes place to our reunion with the Argonauts and a confrontation with a large sea monster en route to the Isle. With the griffin now vanquished, the Argonauts ascend to Medusa's lair, where Jason is returned to stone. The eldest of the Argonauts manages to slay her and save the day. All of those who met her gaze and were turned into stone are freed. Having won the gold and the Gorgon, her golden apples, Jason and Hercules return to Pylos on a Pegasus while the Argonauts set sail on the Argo. Using guile and rhetoric, Jason wins the throne of Pylos and claims the land and the hand of the princess. The Argonauts will still arrive, but Hercules wanders off to new adventures with barbaric boisterousness and bravado. I love the mythic artwork and Val Mayerick. It breathed life into Bill Mantillo's fantastic tale and left me wanting more. Alas, that was not to be. Or it was, but I've yet to stumble across it. The quest continues. And now for Machiste against Dracula. This is from Creepy issue number 21. The tale was written by the legendary Don Glute and was drawn by the mythic Benito Gallego in Romania, sometime in the modern era. The immortal hero, the immortal muscle man, the immortal son of Hercules, Machiste, stumbles into a tavern and discovers that this town and the surrounding area are terrorized by Count Dracula himself, the immortal vampire. So you have immortal hero against immortal villain. And Machiste, being the hero, offers to go there and slay the vampire and rescue those whom he has taken from the town. The battle that they have is titans clashing. And I won't spoil the end for you because it is an ending I did not see. So I'll leave that without revealing any spoilers. But this was a phenomenal series starter. Unfortunately, the series has not continued. Don Glute will, however, be reprinting one of the pages of art, if you can't find the issue, in his new update of the Book of Dracula. So look out for that. And now for a quick song, If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley. Thank you, Ginger, for writing this. It speaks to me deeply.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only If you can dream, if love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be found by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real.
Greetings and welcome back to our Sword and Sandal Cinema Mythic Monsters crossover. I am Hercules Invictus, and we've just completed our first segment, The Legends of Hercules. And now we move to our second segment, Ron Carson's Colosseum, with Ron Carson and Andrea Tutrani, where they will share with us a modern tale of Medusas. Greetings and welcome, O sword and sandal aficionados. How are you?
Hello. Hello, gentlemen. Hercules and Ron, how are we this evening?
Doing awesome.
Hello there. Hello there, Andrea. How are you today?
Great. Tired. It's been a very long and busy day. Finally getting a chance to sit down and relax.
Same here. Same here.
Good. 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 Well,
we have an offering. We have an offering on tonight's Colosseum, ladies and gentlemen,
awesome.
that is not really, you know, sword and sandal related, if you can believe it. It has a peplum theme to it on the title, but the complete genre of this movie is completely bizarre with a capital B, and I wish we'd
Good
be
word.
Talking about the Gorgon Medusa, you know, but instead, we're going into a different realm. So, Andrea, why don't you pick up where I left off over here, because I'm showing this movie to our loyal and faithful audience here, and I don't know exactly what to think, because they're not looking at gladiators and monsters and, you know, elements of mythology in this one, even though it's got a mythological name to it. You got the floor, sweetums. Go ahead.
I think we offer our moviegoers a complete refund and a complimentary popcorn as they leave the theater.
No.
How about we give them a soda to boot, too?
I think so. Maybe an ice cream. Look, you and I discussed this briefly, and I told you about the movie, and you said, well, maybe we should discuss a different movie. I said, no. Please, let's not change it, because there's so much to say about this absolutely lousy movie, which had nothing to do with Medusa. There was not one Gorgon, not one snake appeared in the entire movie. I have no clue why they titled this Medusa with this beautiful image. Oh, you know, I might be the only person in the world that finds Medusa beautiful with the snakes in her head, but I really do. I think it's an absolutely intriguing image. And why they included this movie with that name is way beyond my imagination. Look, I have one thing to say. I think George Hamilton should be embarrassed that his name was put on this movie. He starred in this movie. I really do.
And that's quite a comparison to the 1979 comedy Love at First Bite that he did with Susan St. James,
right,
which featured one of our favorite disco songs in the soundtrack, Alicia Bridges' I Love the Nightlife, because
yes,
it doesn't have any action.
No, I know. The only thing was there was some beautiful scenery of Greece, I'll tell you that much. For what I actually watched of the movie, which I couldn't handle much more than about 35 or 40 minutes, and I kind of flipped through quickly waiting to see when the Medusa appeared, and it didn't. Then I said, okay, this was a total, So there was some beautiful scenery and some beautiful music. I mean, the Greek music is magnificent Greek music, a lot of celebratory music. And with that, I need to ask both of you gentlemen a traditional, something that happens at a traditional Greek feast, but we'll get to that in a moment. But, yeah,
sure.
I don't know why they chose Medusa as the title. It had to do with him and his sister being con artists. And Cameron Mitchell, who was his part was done very well as compared to George Hamilton. He was a loan shark. So, mm-hmm. You know, we can see where that's going. Does not make out very well at the end. So how Medusa fit in there was totally beyond my imagination. I don't know. I really honestly did not watch the end of the movie, so I really don't know how it ended. Boo on me. But I couldn't stand it.
Well, first of all, let me reiterate the fact that Cameron Mitchell is one of the finest character actors that graced the silver and small screens, for starters. And,
yes.
You know, I guess when you are offered a part in a major motion picture, no matter how you expect it to be in the outcome, you still wind up taking the work, because easily somebody else will take your place in 2 seconds when it comes to being in a film of that stature. But
correct.
Yeah, I am disappointed in the fact that, because, you know, George Hamilton made me smile and laugh at on Love at First Bite, which is not exactly a sword and sandal oriented film. It was a comedy. It was set in our old hometown of New York City also, which I liked very much.
Right.
The
right.
soundtrack was awesome. I mean, him and Susan St. James paired up very, very well. Did you know that Susan St. James owns a radio station south of us here in Litchfield County?
No. Wow. No, I did not. Wow. How do you like that?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. She's She's part of the, radio group of people that runs things, you know?
Okay, well, now I've been dying to ask both of you this question. I do know that this is a tradition, and I did research a little as to that it is not permitted unless you're licensed in a restaurant to throw dishes. But now my question is, Why do people throw dishes, and what is the representation of that at a Greek feast?
All right, Hercules, you want to take this one?
Well, basically, some Greeks do break dishes at the weddings or other events, but most do not. And a lot of times, Greeks are very quirky, so we'll feed into other people's misperceptions about things Greek and kind of fuel the misperceptions. So most of the people I've talked to do not break plates, or know that they know anybody who's broken plates, but people expect Greeks to break plates, so occasionally they will, just because people expect it. It's become part of what being Greek is all about.
What is the representation? For example, in a Jewish wedding, the groom steps on the glass, which is supposed to be the, there's several different representations of that. Or is what the representation of? Is it the plate, or is it the breakage, or what is it? What is the? What is
May
the,
I interject on this for a second? You put
sure.
up a good point, because
please.
When Hercules got married to his first wife, it was a Jewish wedding, and I was the best man, the cubado, and I actually did the honor of putting the glass,
you know,
below his shoe before he broke it, and.
Right.
That
right.
is a tradition of luck and a tradition of happiness. And I think this is the reason why the plate breaking pretty much is a metaphor for, you know, people being happy. I mean, it's a custom that pretty much is not common as much in Greece like in the old days. I mean, during the days
right.
when my father used to play in a band, that was very prevalent.
Yeah, I've heard about things like that. I know when I was young, my parents had many Greek friends, and my mother would say that they would go to Greek events and about them breaking dishes. Although
yeah.
I did research it quickly after the movie, and it did say the only thing I was able to find was that in some Greek establishments you need a license to be allow people to throw dishes. If you don't
mm-hmm.
have that specific permit or license, then it's prohibited. And if they find out that you're doing that. The establishment could be fined, yeah. But,
well, because of the fact personal injury could take place because you're dealing with
exactly.
broken plates and some shards of it can go on a person's eye or maybe
exactly.
cut them as the impact is pretty much prevalent in
exactly.
this. And that's the main reason why they have to get that order of protection so they wouldn't be liable
right.
for any damages. Or any personal injury to the customers.
All right. So now, Ron, why do you think they gave the name Medusa to this movie? That's another good question. Why that name?
My thought is probably it was like a code word or something, being that it's, of a gangster-oriented stature. Some people use,
yeah.
you know, different type of code words to... identify
yeah, could be.
And maybe Medusa happened to be the brand of code word that they used in order to, you know, successfully
yeah.
accomplish their nefarious missions. So
yeah.
I would safely say that's.
Yeah, you could be right. Regretfully, I did not really take the time to finish watching it because I just couldn't. I couldn't anymore. I switched to a concert, which I watched till 3 a.m., but the movie I couldn't stand. But, yeah, you could be right. That could have been, you know, when in doubt, put on music.
I'm not going to argue with that one.
Right. So, but once again, the music, one of the opening scenes, of course, was George Hamilton and his sister, who were the pair, the con artist pair. At some kind of a celebration. I don't think it was a wedding. It was just a celebration with Greek men dancing in their traditional Greek dance, folk dance, which I think is wonderful. And breaking
you.
Dishes. And then, yeah, and that part of it was quite enjoyable. And I was like, oh, this is really going to be a great movie. You know, when does the Gorgon come out? And
Now, my quick question is, did it say that this was taking place in the capital city of Athens?
Oh, you know, Crete?
Oh, it was in Crete. Okay.
They did say, but I don't remember. Crete, Cyprus? I don't know. I don't think it was Athens. I think it was either Crete or Cyprus. Am I incorrect by mentioning?
Well, Cyprus is still part Greek, believe it or not.
Well, back then, maybe that's where they might have filmed it there. I really don't. Maybe it was Crete then. The letter C.
Well, if you
it must have been Crete.
I'll put you this way. I'm going to tell you who actually was of Cyprian descent in the world of music. I mean, the late great George Michael from Wham was a Cypriot.
Mm-hmm.
He was his family hailed
really?
From Cyprus because. His real name was George Panos, P-A-N-O-S.
Oh, wow. You see, now I did not know that. No wonder he was absolutely stunning. He was a stunning man. Now we know why.
Well, because he had a lot of Greek in him, first of all, number one. And number two,
right.
you know, I am the bastion of useless information over here, even when it comes to our sword and sandal get-togethers. I mean, I kind of like dropping all these little musical anecdotes because I guess it's part of my livelihood. I kind of like educating the audience. I'm sorry?
Not useless to me. I thought that was quite interesting, actually. Something I did not know.
Hercules, did you know that George Michael was Cypriot?
No, I did not know that. I'm not really into music.
Oh, you learned?
So I wouldn't know that.
Obviously, he hasn't heard a Wham record in a long time, Andrea.
Do you know who George Michael is? That should be the first question.
I've heard the name, yes.
All right. Okay, we'll give you credit for that.
He was one half of a group called Wham, Xavier.
Okay. Yeah.
And they came out with a string of hits in the 1980s, and then George went solo, continued on with his career, minus Andrew Ridgely, who is still with us, believe it or not. And bottom line is that George had a lot of demons to fight, and that's why he left us at a very early age. In 2016, and it was a sad situation because the man was exorbitantly talented in nature in more ways than one.
Phenomenal talent.
Referring
to the name George, referring back to George Hamilton again, I was totally disillusioned by such a poor acting job. Although I don't think George Hamilton was or is that great an actor. He was okay. He played a lot of his parts well, but that's because of the years that he was in Hollywood. Had he have been an actor now, his style would have been too corny or cornball. But I just thought it was definitely a bad part for him. He was just not good. Although, reading some reviews, people did state that he had a great tan. He did have a good tan.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. That much we can give him credit for over here. I wonder if I could detect the tan in the movie when I was watching excerpts of it, you know?
Oh, big time. Especially because he had a white shirt on.
That's a good giveaway. That's an old Shalimar song, if you remember, from the old dance days, Dead Giveaway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to apologize to our moviegoers for such a poor choice. I'm sorry that there was no Medusa or Gorgon in there, since she is my favorite mythical character. Which, like I said earlier, is probably unique as to why she is my favorite. I guess I just feel bad for her that she ended up the way she did because of someone else's error. And she was the victim in all of this. And I can relate to her because I kind of resemble her in the morning.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say that. It's all about the hair, you know?
I just find her very intriguing. So I'm so sorry, Medusa, that they named this movie after you. Wherever you are, I'm sorry.
I'm going to educate you on another thing. There's another area near to where I'm broadcasting from in upstate New York that's on the foot of Albany and Rensselaer County up in the hills, and the name of the village is Medusa, New York, believe it or not.
No way, really? I didn't know that.
Yep, because my radio brother Joe Lavero, who does this show up at RIP 97.9 up there in the Catskill Mountains, that's part of his territory, and he always mentions things that are going on over in Medusa, New York. So just to let you know that she's in pretty much enshrined in a village up in the Helderbergs of Albany County. Yes.
Wow. So to totally change the topic, but remain on Greek mythology, this is something that I did not know, also did not know. You see, now that I'm involved with both of you gentlemen here, I'm learning so much of something that I truly enjoyed and was mesmerizing throughout my entire childhood and years. Several months ago, we did the Minotaur with Theseus, as you say. And I was watching, you know, when I came home today, before I had to go back out to work, I flipped around to the History Channel, and they were discussing the Minotaur. And right to the point, the Aegean Sea was named after the Aegeus? Because his son was killed by the Minotaur, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that's nothing I did not know. I did not know how the Aegean Sea got its name or who it was named after. So
Yes, jump from the cliff at Sunion when Theseus forgot to change the color of his sails. So Aegeus thought that Theseus had died. So in mourning, he threw himself off a cliff.
That's right. He was supposed to put the white sail. Correct?
Yeah.
Right. So see that? So that's something I did not know, and it's absolutely fascinating. Now I know. I learn something new all the time. Very, very interesting.
Well,
and
Hercules and I will definitely educate you on the realm of Greek mythology in more ways than one.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Another character that that there's very few, well, certainly nothing, no movies about him, was Sisyphus. And I learned about him when I worked in the criminal justice system. There was a lawyer who had on his desk a gold-looking statue, a stick figure of a man pushing a rock. And I said, well, I like that. He goes, you know who that is? And he told me that was Sisyphus. So researching who Sisyphus was also was totally fascinating to me. And that's another Greek character that I had researched and find quite interesting. But there's no movies about him, or are there?
Cuz, would you like to chime in on that one?
About Sisyphus?
Yes.
Not that I know. He appeared as a character on the Xena and Hercules shows by Renaissance Pictures. But I'm not aware of any movie. I know that the Sisyphean theme has been dealt with in movies. And when they're discussing the underworld in like documentaries, they'll show Sisyphus occasionally. But in terms of a movie, I'm not off the cuff aware of any of them.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. And Ron, I know you can relate to some days we all feel like Sisyphus. We get to the top and roll back. I know I've had many days like that. Oh boy.
That's all I'm going to say.
Very interesting character. Very interesting character. Well, I hope we can choose something a little better for our audience next time, and I apologize to them for the bad choice of movies.
Well, on their next appearance to the Coliseum, they're going to have free popcorn and a soda of their choice.
I think that's it. And some bonbons. My mother used to always buy me bonbons.
Well,
we'll pass the bonbons
before the curtain comes up. How's that sound?
That's right. And then we'll pass out the rum candy.
No, we're going to skip the rum candy. We got to be an alcohol-free establishment, number one. Number two, we would serve them spaghetti and meatballs along with piccalilli and chow chow, but they're not dizzy bean. You know what I mean? They're not warming
all
up before the bullpen.
All right. Well, it was quite an interesting discussion about non-peplum sword and sandal movie. Sorry.
And I will put up a quest for if anybody could find the answer as to why there was no Medusa in the film about Medusa, but Medusa appears in the posters for the movie. Maybe somebody knows.
Yes, I know.
I will ask the question. Thank you both very much. If you can kindly share your contact information before we wrap up, that would be awesome.
All righty.
Ladies first.
Ron, you want to go first? Oh, thank you so much.
No, ladies first.
Gentlemen.
Always.
Thank you. I am on Facebook at Andrea Tutrani, and there are other Tutranis. They're my beautiful nieces, but I'm the only Andrea there. And if you look at my photo right now, you will see my number one drummer's image. You will not see my image there. So don't look for my photo, but look for Andrea Tutrani on Facebook.
Happy birthday to the legendary Carl Palmer, who celebrated birthday number 72 on Sunday. Andrea, you and I had the privilege of seeing him perform not once but twice within the past couple of months. two awesome concerts in more ways than one. And he's just going to keep on rocking because he's keeping the Emerson Lake and Palmer legacy intact.
Wonderful.
So,
great.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. I do like the cover photo, too.
I
the profile
do.
Picture. I do like the profile of Carl Palmer. I mean, because, you know, this man is a musical legend, for starters. And getting to my information, you know, I am friendable on Ron Carson. Just type in my name on the toolbar, and I'd be glad to put you on board. And as for my radio show, it airs on WSBS in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. If you're within the sound of my voice anywhere in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, northwestern Connecticut, or eastern New York, it's at 860 AM, 94.1 FM. But we always have our online platforms available for those out of the range. You can log on to the website, WSBS.com, better yet. I know you have the app, Sweetums. You can download it for nothing and take us along wherever you go. We are portable, and we also have step-by-step instructions on our website on how you can install the smart speaker devices where you can just say, Alexa, bring us WSBS, and she will comply in more ways than one. So, but I look forward to hearing from Hercules' loyal audience. And again, curtain comes down on another edition of the Coliseum. A lot of disappointed sword and sandal enthusiasts, but we'll make it up to them next month for sure.
And there will be a quest out of this. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Cuz, we didn't hear you.
And a quest will come of this. Maybe somebody out there in the sword and sandal community knows the answer. Maybe there was a Medusa that got cut out. Who knows? But we'll try to find out. Thanks to both of you.
Great.
You're awesome. And I will talk
Thank
to both
you
both soon. Take care.
All right. Have a wonderful evening, gentlemen.
Kalinichta, Xadelfe.
Kalinichta. Love you all. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep.
And now for Brian's Drive-In Theater with Brian Walker. Greetings and welcome, Brian. How are you?
I am tired, but otherwise well, Hercules. How are you this evening?
Doing great. How was your vacation? Or how is your vacation?
Well, no, it was. Got back a couple of days ago. We spent about 6 days on Hilton Head Island, and then we went to visit friends in Atlanta for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. So, and we drove, so we were on the road a lot, and there was lots of traffic and lots of backups. But we had a really good time, and it's always good to see our friends in Atlanta. We don't get to see them that often, but when we do, we always have a great time.
Fantastic. And you were greatly missed on our Mummy panel. It wasn't the same show without you. welcome back, and I'm glad you're going to be contributing toward that exploration today with early Universal Mummy movies.
Yes. And, you know, Hercules, we've talked about this before, but although I have a lot of movies that I would probably put in my top 100 favorite movies. And for that, you know, for me, you know, one of my favorite movies is one I can probably watch, you know, any day, anytime, you know, day or night. And the original Universal 1932, you know, the version of The Mummy with Boris Karloff is in my top 10 of movies. You know, since, way back in the days before streaming, whenever my partner and I would take vacation, we would always take a portable DVD player and a little container of DVDs with us. And The Mummy always went with us because that was one of those movies that I can always watch. You can ask my partner. I probably made him watch it 100 times, you know, over the years. But it's one that the first time I saw it, it just sort of blew me away. I'm a huge Boris Karloff fan, obviously. But he's different than the other actors who portrayed the mummy, and he only portrayed the mummy once. he was kind of a tall but kind of a slight man. There wasn't a whole lot of muscle to him or anything. He was a very skinny man. And he had the sallow jaws, and face, which sort of lent itself to sort of looking dead. Do you know where I'm going with this? Well, I mean, he did. And I think that's why he worked so well in the original Frankenstein, because, I mean, he did look cadaverous. And in this movie, I've got to say, some of the scenes, especially where he's looking dead on into the camera, still give me chills. I mean, I first saw it. I think I was a teenager or so when I saw The Mummy the first time. But there's a scene where the camera comes in pretty close on Boris Karloff, as Ardith Bey. And his skin, I don't know what James Whale put on his face in order to make his skin crack and pucker the way it did. But it's just an amazing effect. And they shoot a pin light in to make the rest of him look more sinister. It's beautifully photographed because it was Universal. But his cranial structure, his facial structure, makes him really scary. I mean, he does a great job, with the part, but, and for, an actor who was supposed to be, sort of a big pussycat in real life, he's downright terrifying in this movie. And this movie, among all of the others in that early Universal Mummy arc, which runs about 23 years, really, this is the one where I find the Mummy to be the character that the character of the Mummy in the film to be the most terrifying, and you do get to see. Ardith Bey or Imhotep in it more than you get to see the Mummy in some of the subsequent Universal films. But again, I love the performance of Boris Karloff. There's a side story that goes on, especially at the beginning, with Zita Jahan and David Manners. They're sort of the love interest, in the film. And, their paths cross with Imhotep, unfortunately. Fortunately, the way it works out. And I actually have a David Manners page on the drive-in site. I don't have anything for Zita Jahan, which is a shame, but she was in just a precious few films. As with every page on my website, I would love to have, even more pages, but sometimes information and photographs, are really hard to come by. But David Manners, his career was pretty short. He was an actor in films for, let's say, 6-7 years or so before he... He was from a wealthy family, so he was able to drift off and do other things and act in stage plays and write books and such. But he was in some pretty interesting films in the early 30s. He's obviously not only is he in The Mummy, he's also in Dracula. He's Jonathan Harker, the love interest in Dracula. He was a handsome guy, so I mean it's kind of easy to see why he would, kind of drift into some of these horror parts, as the romantic male lead, to sort of give, I guess, to give the audience a break from all the terror and horror that Boris Karloff is bringing in the case of The Mummy. To give audiences back then a relief, because if you think about a lot of early films, some of these, the Mummy is now a 90-year-old film, correct?
Yeah, I would guess.
It came out in 1932. It is still really creepy and Very well done visually. I'm not sure that CGI. I know that CGI would not make this film any better or any more effective in terms of the visual.
Are you there?
Yes. I'm sorry. Had an interruption there for a second.
Is everything okay?
I missed that. Hello?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay, great.
I think we had a temporary loss of connection, but we're back. I didn't actually, to prepare for tonight, I didn't actually watch the 1932 version of The Mummy since I've seen it, like I said, at least 100 times. And as my partner reminded me, I watched it most recently around the holiday or the Halloween season, that is. So and I could probably recite the script, you know. But I wanted to watch some of the other mummy films in the early Universal set. Just a few weeks ago, I ran The Mummy's Curse, which is from 1944. It's one of the – there seems to be some dispute as to whether or not it's public domain. Some people say that it is, and some people say that it isn't. It is on archive.org, so I didn't run it. And in this movie, Lon Chaney Jr. Is the mummy, and he is the mummy in he had a couple of rounds with being the mummy. And you know, Lon Chaney Jr. is an interesting guy in the Universal films because he's the only actor to portray all of the big Universal monsters: you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman. Of course, the Wolfman was. He originated that, but he also played the mummy. And your wife Athena and I were, chatting back and forth about Lon Chaney
yes.
Jr. I think he's a fantastic actor. He did a really good job, especially in these 40s Universal films. He's very effective. He's very intense. A very different actor from his father, and I realized that he hated being shackled with the Lon Chaney Jr. name. That wasn't really his name, but the studio kind of made him take it on in order to borrow from the notoriety of his father. But he was an excellent actor in his own right. In many ways, just as impressive, if not even more impressive, than his father.
Yes, his name wasn't Lon Chaney originally, though, my wife was telling me.
His name was Creighton Chaney.
Okay.
And it's an interesting name, definitely from the past. But I guess on a theater marquee, Lon Chaney Jr. looks better. But from what I've read, he really... He didn't want to use his father's name. He wanted to be known for his own accomplishments. But using his father's name, obviously would open a few doors. And like this, he was a very accomplished actor in his own right. Made scores of horror films, very good ones. And actually, made them up until the point where he couldn't really work anymore. His presence alone, would sell a film to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that, until I started preparing for our talk tonight that I don't think I've ever seen it before, not the complete movie anyway, is The Mummy's Hand. It's actually the second in the series of the early Universal mummy films. And I've seen pictures of it and I've seen clips from it, but I don't think I've ever, until today actually, sat down and watched it end to end, which shocked me because I've seen the rest of them. I just didn't remember watching this one, not in its entirety anyway. And this one's a bit different in that it's largely a retelling of the first movie. It really borrows heavily from the 1932 version of The Mummy, although there's more shtick in it. There's more byplay between, you know, two of the main characters in it. But in this one, the mummy is portrayed by one of my favorite Western actors. His name was Tom Tyler. He made scores of Westerns and Western serials in the 30s and 40s. For anybody who's interested in, superhero films, because that's so popular now, he portrayed the Phantom in the 1943 serial. And he was also Captain Marvel in the 1941 serial. So he was a physical culturist back in the day. He was very athletic. You certainly looked the part, as Captain Marvel and the Phantom, even though at the time he probably would have been about 40, not a young guy, but still in very good condition. And in this, of course, he's swaddled, in bandages. His makeup's very convincing. It looks very good. One thing that Universal did with Tom Tyler's mummy is they got the animation department in to color in his eyes, and it gave them movement. So his eyes are just these two dark black pits, but there's movement in them at the same time around the edges. It's sort of like they're spinning. Almost. I don't know if that effect is intentional or if it's just the result of animating it in like 15 minutes, because it was made to a cost. Everything is. He's not in it enough, unfortunately. That's probably my big criticism of the mummy's hand. Yeah. You just don't get to see the mummy enough. There's too much shtick from the two leads, which was Dick Foran, who was in a lot of 40s Universal films. He was a singer, too. And he has a sidekick in it, Wallace Ford, who's he's straight out of Brooklyn. He's there to provide comic relief. The antagonist in this one, other than Tom Tyler as Karras the Mummy, is George Zucco. One of my favorites, especially in pre-war horror films, but he did some post-war horror films too. A great actor. Unfortunately, he's one of those actors that I just never did put a page together for him. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that I plan on doing at some point. But he's a really good adversary, a great actor, of course. He can read lines very well. But he also, especially when the camera is solely on him, when he's the one in the close-up shot, he's very subtle. He can be a very subtle actor at the same time. Just with facial expressions, he can give you sort of that devious, creepy, up to no good antagonist better than anybody else, really. I could watch anything that George Zucco, and I probably have watched anything that George Zucco has done over the years. Like I said, though, Tom Tyler as Karras the Mummy in this is, when you do get to see him, it's scary. It will send a chill down your spine, especially with the black eyes that seem to be spinning. My big criticism of the mummy's hand, although it's shot well and lit well, it's a quality Universal production, is that it drags at the very beginning when they're trying to set everything up. They more or less do a shot-by-shot retelling of the first movie, which was just 8 years before, with some of the footage from the first movie intercut, so they can keep the budget down, on this one. But a lot of it is reshot because just in the 8 years between the two movies, photography got better, film stock got better, sound certainly. improved greatly, you know, from the early 30s to 1940. So that part of it, I really appreciate. But I just wish we got to see more of the mummy. We don't get to see much at all. And if you look really closely at the makeup job and the bandages that Tom Tyler is wearing, you can see his face. You know, he had a pretty prominent nose, kind of an interesting looking guy, and you can see his face in the bandages very well. The makeup job is terrific. Another one that I hadn't seen for a long time, and it's counted in the canon of early Universal horror films, is Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. It's the last of the line. It was made in 1955. I love Abbott and Costello films. Some of their movies, yes, are better than others. I have a couple of favorites. Hold That Ghost is probably my favorite Abbott and Costello film. It's funny. It's got some chills. It has some great character actors in it. If you've never seen Hold That Ghost before, you know, pick it up at Halloween. It's one of those movies that Greg and I watch for Halloween. You know, it's probably one of the first ones that we watch every year. You know how some people have their own favorite Christmas movies that they'll watch. Well, for us, it's more Halloween than it is Christmas. But Hold That Ghost is just a really fun film. It's Richard Carlson, Evelyn Ankers, who was a great Universal screen queen. One of my favorite comedians, Joan Davis, is in it. There's so much to recommend the film. It's fantastic. And later in the 40s, Abbott and Costello, since they did have that hit with Hold That Ghost, where they blend comedy and horror, post war they started doing it in earnest. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It's apparently the most popular movie shown on Sven Gulli on MeTV, and he's the Chicagoland Saturday Night Horror host. And I watch Sven Gulli every Saturday night. He has access to the Universal catalog, so you do get to see a lot of the Universal films, which is fantastic. And he gives you when he's running a film, and since these films are, a lot of them are like 70 minutes long, if that. For a 2-hour show, you have to pad quite a bit, and he will do like informational segments about the production of the film. Not mocking it, not making fun of it, but just giving you additional information about its production. I know that we've talked about Sven Gulli before, and I don't think you get MTV or MeTV.
I don't think so. I've heard of Sven Gulli, though. I know fans of Sven Gulli's, yourself, other people as well, that watch him religiously. So I'm sure there's a way for me to get Sven Gulli.
Well, get this. I've got my 76-year-old mother watching Sven Gulli. She's now she's the one who got me to start watching horror films. So that's not really all that out of character for her. But my partner's mother lived with us for a while until she passed away at 94. And in her early 90s, when she started living with us, we watched Sven Gulli on Saturday night, and that became kind of a ritual with her too. She wasn't a huge fan of horror movies, and some of the Universal horror films are kind of scary, and I think she watched a few of them with her hands over her eyes. She was fairly heavily medicated. She had to take lots of different medications for different things. It made her drowsy. But the one thing that she would stay awake for, the one complete movie that she would watch, would always be Saturday Night with Sven Gulli. I don't know why, but my partner and I used to you kind of marvel at that was the one thing that she could stay awake for. I don't know if it was because you know, Svengoolie does show horror films, and the, you know, the more effective ones may have gotten to her and kept her awake. And she, you know, Svengoolie also does musical segments, and you know, my mother-in-law played piano, for a church for many, many years, and I think that was probably part of the allure too. Svengoolie is addictive. I love old horror hosts anyway. But it's just fascinating that, you know, 70 years, you know, after the first horror hosts, got rolling, we still have a few around. I wish we had more. You know, it used to be every, you know, decent medium-sized television market had a, you know, weatherman who would double as the horror host on the weekend. But it's terrific that we've got one that, you know, most people can see kind of nationwide. In a lot of areas, you can get MeTV over the air. We have a satellite dish, but we also I also installed an HD antenna a number of years ago on our house, so we can pull in MeTV locally where I live.
Uh huh.
Just from we also get it on the satellite dish, for the over the air HD antenna, we can pull it in locally, and I think a lot of people probably can. It's one of those second or third channels that a lot of ABC, NBC, or CBS affiliates will have.
I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay.
To your presentation. We're running out of time, though. We really have a couple of minutes. When you finish, just share your contact information.
Oh, certainly. Anyway, I was just talking about, the Universal catalogs, Svengoolie, Abbott and Costello.
Uh-huh.
Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, it's a lot of fun. It has Marie Windsor. I've got a page for her on the drive-in. She was a really hard-bitten femme fatale in a lot of 50s film noir. She's really good, you know, at it. But she's doing comedy really well in this film. She's got pretty good pacing. Michael and Sarah is in it. He's a bad guy. Bud and Lou are still pretty good. Bud's getting a little old, but he retired, you know, the following year after this. It's a pretty good entry. Now, of all of the Abbott and Costello comedy horror films, you know, Hold That Ghost for me is first. Second's probably Abbott and Costello Meet the Killer Boris Karloff. And I think that's one that Svengoolie has shown. It's really good. Boris Karloff has really good comedic timing, which is kind of, it's kind of an interesting, pairing. But he's excellent in it, and the script's pretty strong too. And they gave when you have two stars, usually the guest doesn't get the greatest lines, but Boris has the best lines in the film. So I guess I don't know if that's just because of who wrote it, or if he was a really good actor, and you could do a lot with Boris Karloff.
And on that note, on the versatility of Boris Karloff, we have to wrap up.
Well, if you'd like to head on over to the new and improved Brian's Drive-In Theater, I'm about a third of the way through the site redesign. As I've mentioned for the last 2 months, this is taking a while, but I am still making forward progress. And I think the site is going to greatly benefit from this. It may take me a year to get it done, but every page is going to be touched up, facelifted, new photos, lots and lots of new text, new content, lots of new video content. I really like the changes that I'm seeing in it. And I want to get it ready before the 25th anniversary next February.
Incredibly awesome. I'm looking forward to experiencing the completed project. I know I'm enjoying the evolution. Brian, welcome back, and thank you so very much for expanding our panel. on the mummies, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Well, and I look forward to that too, Hercules. Have a good evening.
You. And thanks to everybody who tuned in. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you, Hercules.